Greetings and may the peace of Christ be with you. Welcome to Holy Family Radio. This is Deacon Jim Thorndale, and I'm privileged to be your host today. I warmly invite you to enter into another conversation in living the Catholic life. Here in Grand Rapids, we are so privileged to have so many beautiful Catholic churches in our diocese. But you know, it's a sincere privilege when you understand that a parish has survived 100 years and are continuing to educate our Catholics both at church and schools and all the beautiful ministries that a church is endowed with during 100 years. And today, we're going to be talking about this beautiful anniversary at St. Francis Xavier Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I am surrounded here by some beautiful members of St. Francis. Let me first go around and introduce them to you. First, we have Don Jander Noah. He's a retired businessman and a former St. Francis Xavier member. He's still active, and he's active in many committees over there. He has five children through St. Francis. He knew Monsignor Schultz, LeBeau, Wazinski, Antikyer, and Nadonsky. All these different ones. So welcome. Thank you for being here, Don.
Thank you.
Yes. We also have Mrs. Camp Schulte, and you gave me the privilege, Mrs. Camp Schulte, of saying that you are now 100 years old. So you and the church are celebrating the same anniversary.
Right, right.
And you are widowed now and active in the parish yet. Is that right? You're active in the parish in St. Francis Xavier.
Oh, yes, I'm St. Francis. I'm not too active anymore.
Oh,
but
you could be to me. And then we have Barbara Hansen. She's a member of St. Francis, a single.
Yes.
A convert. You're working on the 100th anniversary committee.
Oh, yes.
Wonderful. Thank you. And Angie Ciccone. How are you today, Angie?
I'm awesome today.
Former pastoral associate at St. Francis, and you're widowed. You presently are teaching religious education at St. Francis Xavier. You are a part of the charismatic renewal that was at St. Francis and St. James. And it's a privilege to have all of you here with me. So thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome.
Thank you. You know, as we begin to talk about something like this, you know, you never think about your parish getting to that 100-year anniversary. And here you are at a beautiful time when you can really look back and reflect on what it's meant to be a church and a community over there in the southeast side of Grand Rapids. Because we all know many pastors have passed through there, many parishioners, and it's all been a blessing. So, Angie, just kind of start us off. What does this entail? What's this 100th anniversary going to bring around for us, for St. Francis?
I just think for me, I can only speak for me.
Okay.
Anytime we celebrate something like this in a parish, I think it just reminds us of how awesome God is.
Yes.
I just think that for me, I look at this parish, this beautiful parish of St. Francis Xavier, now called the Shrine of St. Francis Xavier and Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Yes.
I look at this beautiful church, and I think about all the people that have kept this church going, from the people that built it to the present day. I look at the baptismal font, and I think, how many baptisms have there been in this font? And when I walk into church on Sunday morning and I dip my finger in the font and make the sign of the cross, I think about that. And when we were thinking about the anniversary, 100 years, I thought, wow, I wonder if somebody could add all that up and tell us how many people had been baptized in St. Francis. It's just a privilege to be a part of this church.
You know, explain to me a little bit the difference in the name now and how that transpired.
Well, when Father Jose Quintana became the pastor, he wanted to bring a huge, large statue. And I say huge, large. What is it, about 15 feet high?
I've seen it. It's very large.
Yes, it's wonderful, of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And in the process of wanting to do this, all of a sudden it was talked about, well, maybe it should be a shrine. And he talked with the bishop and all the others, powers to be, and we were given permission to become a shrine, and our focal point of the shrine, or focal piece of the shrine, is the statue of Our Lady of Guadalupe, which was carved in Mexico and came from Mexico.
Yes.
And if anybody out there hasn't seen it, please, you're welcome to go and view it. It's absolutely beautiful.
What is the attendance now of Latinos in Any idea? The last time, probably 70 or 80%, perhaps.
I'd say that it is. It is mostly a Hispanic parish.
Yes. Yes.
With a remnant of the Anglo population still there.
Of course. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful parish.
Oh, it is. I couldn't leave.
Yes. And I've been privileged to be with you on some Life in the Spirit seminars, and I thank you for that also. It's
been wonderful.
Mr. Jandanoa, Don Jandanoa, I will say, tell us your experience with St. Francis over the years.
Well, my family experience started before I did. My mother and father were married in the basement of the church in 1916.
My goodness.
And my mother was an immigrant from Holland, Netherlands. My dad came here to the veterinary school, Grand Rapids School of Veterinary and Medical. Both doctors and veterinary.
Right.
And so that's where we started. But I moved here in 1962 with my family of five from Ionia. Hmm. And by coincidence, my daughter is in South, my eldest daughter, at that time we had five children. My eldest daughter is in South Africa at the moment. She called this morning and I said, Beth, what do you remember about St. Francis? Oh, she says, I remember the nuns. They were so good to us. And she was in the eighth grade at that time, and we had 10 grades.
Yes.
And then she said, I remember how easy it was to get acquainted and how close the parish was. My memory is at that time, and Dorothy may have helped me on this, is that we had about 1,500 families. I know it was the largest family in the diocese, very active, and it's an exciting time to be a member.
It is. It is. You know, and you never envision you're going to see the 100th anniversary like this, no. Don, but, you know, it's really a privilege to have that in a parish because it really testifies to the strength and longevity of the Catholic faith there, too. So, Mrs. Camp Schulte.
Yes.
We're going to turn to you now because you probably have a lot of memories about St. Francis.
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
But it's hard for me to put a lot of it into words.
Yeah, that's okay. Do you have one fond memory you can think of or one you'd like to share with us at any time?
I just think I was very fortunate to have been born of two people who were from Catholic families way back.
Yes.
And no, you didn't join the Catholic. You were born the Catholic. And
that's right.
It was part of our life.
That's right.
And my very first memory of St. Francis when I came, I was just 10 years old, very right to the day almost. And we would see this priest walking up and down between the rectory and the church, shock of white hair.
Yes.
He's either reading his missal or else he was saying his rosary. And that was my first impression of St. Francis.
Isn't that wonderful? Well, and you've seen many pastors come through there, I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
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 All of them.
And I'm not going to ask you for a favor, but I know they're all your favorites, right?
Well, I want to tell one little thing about Father McAllister.
Please.
We always had 8 o'clock Mass in the morning for the children. And you weren't obliged to come to that Mass, but if you could, they wanted you to do so. And so we always tried to get there for part of it anyway. And when he left the altar and got back into his regular cassock and clothes and came out, he never left that sanctuary without stopping in front of Our Lady of Perpetual Help statue, which at that time was where the choir is now. Mm-hmm. And every morning he'd say a prayer there before he left church.
I'm
so impressed with that.
Yes, how beautiful. How beautiful that is. It's a real testimony to our priests. What a wonderful thing that is.
Yes.
Barbara.
Yes.
Thank you for being here, too. It says that you are, we said we were a convert, and you're working on the committee. Tell us about what's going on with the committee and what you're working on.
Well, currently we are working on the history, and we're developing a timeline, which Linda Smith has worked diligently on. She's gone to the library, and we've gone through the archives of the church itself. And they've put together, as I look at it, a very thorough outline of what has happened through the years.
Okay.
And There are lots of milestones, of course.
Can you give us a few of them? We'd love to hear of them.
Oh, my goodness. I can't really. Okay. Without the numbers in front of me, because I did research here and there, and it's not sequential in my mind.
Okay.
You know. But
my mind is never sequential, so don't worry about it.
Oh. Well, anyway, it's been a delightful research.
Yes.
And I think I look back at one of the things that meant a lot to me was the implementation of our adoration room.
Yes, and that, yeah. It's really a testimony to that parish, that adoration,
yes,
chapel,
yes,
because it's what keeps the parish alive.
Right.
Amen.
And we've had so many people who've been blessed with that opportunity to visit our Lord at any time of day and night.
Yes.
And
I know my wife and I have been in there often. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful chapel to be, mm-hmm, in for adoration to the Lord.
Another thing that astounded me, too, was that the church itself has reached out in so many ways, not the least of which is to have helped refugee families. I could only think of one at the time I was starting the research.
Yes.
We had at least four.
What year did you join? Do you remember what year you joined the parish?
Yes. I was in 1961. I was married in St. Francis. I didn't realize that it was such a new church at the time.
Yes.
And I'm a convert, so this was a lovely...
Can I ask from where?
Oh, yes. Burton Heights Methodist Church.
Okay,
yes.
Okay.
And do you want to know anything about,
you know,
the convert?
I do. I think that it's an inspiring story, I'm sure, because our listeners, you know, whenever we hear a convert, sometimes us cradled Catholics don't understand what, of just seeing the Catholic Church, what was it that brought you into the Catholic Church?
Well, I was a teacher and had summers off. So
okay.
Every other summer I would gather up about 10 people who were young women, men and women who were college students. And I would lead them through bicycle trips through Europe. And before you could do that, you had to prove yourself worthy of being a trip leader by having a tour through the United States and Canada. So we had labored to get into Montreal, and there was supposed to be this beautiful shrine. I thought, okay, kids, here we go. We'll see yet another shrine or church. And I was so hot and horrible. I thought, just let me sit down in the cool of this building. And I was looking around and thought, wow, look at all those crutches over there. Oh, what the heck is this about? And I thought, well, there's some literature on the chair in front of you. Why don't you just pull that out and look a little bit? So I looked at this material. And in reading it, I found that outside there were life-sized statues. And it was the way of the cross. I thought, what's the way of the cross? Well, it must be the way Jesus walked, Calvary, right? Okay. Well, my father was a cabinet maker. And so wood was really special to me, the tactile thing and the visual thing about wood. So I went outdoors and I thought, oh, my gosh. Life-size statues. And I saw people on their knees walking up this hill. I thought, what is going on? I looked at the first station, the second station. I kept going up higher and higher and higher. When I got to the top, I was in tears. I thought, oh, Lord, you did this for me? For me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I need to know more. I just need to know more. Okay. So time went on. And there was another trip. And it was in Europe. And we got down to Assisi. And, well, you know, I had to help my students who were trying to see everything. We were going to this beautiful basilica cathedral or something, or the basilica, I don't know which. Anyway, St. Francis's home. And when we got in there, there were all these beautiful art objects. And one of my students said, I can't look and read at the same time. Could you help me out? I said, sure. I'll read the description, and you do the looking. So I talked and talked, and Tom looked and looked. And we got to flip the page, and I said, you know, there's supposed to be a beautiful garden here, Tom. And it's behind a door. Well, we were looking for the ordinary sized door, and we didn't see any door. It was a whole wall of door. And I said, look, this huge ring, this must be something. And the footnote said, you can ask one of the friars to come unlock. And so we walked around, and we found one, and he came back with this enormous key, put it in the huge key place, turned it, and then pulled out hard. It took a bit of effort to get that to swing open, and it creaked in a beautiful way. There was a garden, and it was just at sunset. We were looking through a grill, and it was absolutely marvelous. And right in the center of the garden was the statue of St. Francis of Assisi. And he had his hands out. And I thought, what's this for? That's where the birds would come, and they would feed, or they would get water, whichever it was. And I thought, oh, I know where I need to be. This is where I need to be, in this Catholic environment. And later, much later, I'm in Sonoma, California, and I had gone to church, was going to have confession. My confessor later on was talking with me and divulged that he was a Franciscan, and he had worked right there. He knew exactly where I'd been in the garden. And he said, do you know what, Barbara? That statue in the year has snow in it, and the snow melts. He said that it never freezes in St. Francis's hands. The birds can always come and drink that water. And I thought, living water.
Yes.
I am now in
living water. Isn't that wonderful?
That was the beginning.
You know, it's an important story, because we often look at people sitting in our Catholic pews thinking they're always, from birth, you've been Catholic. But you've had a transformation. You've really had an epiphany of the truth of the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. I hope our listeners have the chance to visit those sites and really have that same awe that you had about our church here, our Catholic Church. So with this then, Barbara, you really must be really digging into the history of the church.
Yes. Right.
What a wonderful thing. Let me go back to Angie now. Angie, as you think back on the church and all the, and I'm not putting anybody on the spot for their favorite pastor, because that's not what we're about, because we're about the church. But you probably have some fond memories of things that transpired when you were working at St. Francis.
Oh, many, many memories. We could be here 2 days. But I'll start with when I got to St. Francis. Okay. I joined St. Francis in 1989.
Now, you're a cradle Catholic?
I'm a cradle Catholic.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. I was working with Father Charles Andekeyer at St. James, and he was the pastor there. And then he, you know, after they were there in those days, it was you were there so many years, then you had to go to another parish.
Right.
And he was stationed at St. Francis then. And there was, working with me was Andy Venza,
mm-hmm.
and Ken Baldwin.
Of course.
And the three of us worked together. And Father Andekeyer wanted us to go to St. Francis with him. And the three of us loved St. James. I mean, we had been there 8 years.
Yeah.
We love St. James. My husband had worked for a year with Father Andekeyer at St. James, and I was just his helper. And then he passed away. And then Father asked me to stay on and continue his work, which I did. And when we had to leave St. James, it was like I was leaving a part of my husband. And Andy and Ken weren't sure either if we should be doing this. So we went over for a visit. I didn't even know where St. Francis was. I mean, I think I had been there once for something, but many years before. And we had to look it up on the map to find out where it was in the city. And so we made our way there, and there was this huge, beautiful church. And we went to see the pastor there, who was Father Wisniewski at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very, very, very hospitable. He says, sure, I'll take you on a tour. So he took us over to the church, and he had his key and opened up the door. And I'm going to have to backtrack just for a little
bit. That's all right.
right before my husband died, he said many things to me that the Lord was speaking to him about. And one of them was, he was addressing my fear of, okay, now what do I do? And he said to me, don't even worry about that. God has that all taken care of. He says he will put you in a place where there will be large locks on the door, on all the doors. And he said, and you will be safe. And that's where he will want you to be. And at the time, I thought, oh, he's just a little delirious or something, you know. But now I'll go back
little
to...
Little did you know.
Little did I know. Now I'll go back to our tour at St. Francis with Father Wisniewski. We walk in the side door that he had unlocked, and he's explaining a few things to us about the church. And there was a picture of the old church on the wall, and he said, this was the old church. And I'm looking around, and if all of you know what I'm talking about, and I know you do, at that time, all these big, huge doors that were entrances into the church had these huge locks on them.
Yes.
With huge, big chains even. And I'm looking at these doors, and I'm not paying any attention to what's going on. And I'm just frozen in time. Locks on the doors. Large locks on the doors. And I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. And Andy Venza looked at me, and he said, what's the matter? He saw I turned white. And I said, Andy, look at the doors. He did, and Ken looked, and it was like... Yeah, you know, I said, look at the locks. And it took them a while to put this together, and their eyes got really big, and they remembered what Jake had said. Yeah, sure. My husband had told
me. He was a prophet to you.
Yes, he was.
Yes.
And I said, Father, do you have locks like this on all the doors? He said, oh, yes, this is how we lock the doors, because we had a break-in. And and so they put these big, huge locks on every single door. And there's a lot of doors at St. Francis.
Yes.
And that was my entrance into St. Francis.
You knew it was the place to be.
And I knew I was supposed to be there, whether I wanted to be there or not.
Yes.
And we shed a lot of tears when we left St. James, came over to St. Francis. And I just fell in love with the people.
Yeah.
I fell in love with the church. I love the church. The new buildings are nice, the newer churches that are built more like the pyramids, you know. But I love this ark kind of church.
Exactly. The altars and the beautiful statues.
The stained glass windows.
Yes.
And, you know, I was the RCIA director. And it is the most wonderful church to teach people, you know, coming into the church about the history of our church.
Yes.
It has it all.
Yes.
I didn't even need a book. I would just bring them into the church. I'd start from the back in the vestibule, bring them in, and there are so many beautiful, wonderful Catholic symbols in the church that I just had to, that was my my book.
Yes.
May I insert something here?
So for those who are just joining us, this is Holy Family Radio. This is Deacon Jim Thorndahl, and I'm here with the people from St. Francis as we're talking about the 100th anniversary of the church coming up very soon. Let's continue on. Go ahead, Bart.
Well, I can remember, Andy, when I was becoming a Catholic, I was given a tour by Sister Natalie through the sanctuary, and she would look right and left and tell me about the beautiful stained windows, and she could teach me so much
just
through
one.
Through the windows. Dorothy and I did a study of those windows. Do you remember, Dorothy?
Oh, yes, yeah.
What do you remember about the windows themselves, and how much did we spend on purchasing those windows? Do you remember? Or
I don't know that, but everything was an awful lot of the equipment around there came from abroad.
Right.
Yes.
Italy and Rome and so forth. And I remember when they got the, after communion.
The tabernacle?
The tabernacle. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Monsignor Schultz wasn't happy with what they sent. It wasn't exactly what he ordered. Mm-hmm. He was very, very particular.
Yes.
And he said it should be taller. He said it shouldn't. Well, he sent that back until he got the right one for that tabernacle.
Good for him. Yeah. A man who knows what he wants.
Sounds like Monsignor. You know,
I do want to go back to Angie just a minute, though, because you brought a name up that's very near and dear to me also. It was Andy Venza. My aunt, Rose Venza, who was married to my Uncle Bob, I know he was dear to the parish there, too, Andy.
That was his mother.
Yes, it was his mother, my aunt.
Andy was very dear, yes.
Yes, and we missed him after he passed away.
Yes, he did.
Yes.
We missed him. We still miss him today.
Exactly, but pray for him.
Yes, and then it ended. Andy passed away after a year and a half of being at St. Francis, very involved with the men of the parish. And then it was Ken and I, Ken Baldwin and I, that were left.
And of course, Ken wasn't a deacon yet.
No, he was not a deacon yet.
Right,
no,
right.
No.
Wonderful.
And many wonderful things happened through our different ministries over the years. And I do remember one particular time when we were in the church. And it was, I had my grandson with me. I was very privileged that all my grandchildren went to St. Francis. And I had my grandson with me. He was in the first grade. And we were just praying, the two of us. It was before school. And he said, "You know what, Grandma? You see that box up there? That's the holiest box in the whole world." I said, "Really?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "That's the tackle box."
Good for him. He probably knows more than most Catholics do.
Yes, he probably did.
Don, tell us your memories of St. Francis.
Well, as I said, we moved there in 1962, and I think we kind of hit the very peak of the parish history and effectiveness and activity. We think there were about 1,500 families at that time. Monsignor Schultz was in charge, and he ran a good parish.
A tight ship.
Tight ship. He was often assigned new priests for training. They thought, well, this is a good place for him. So at one time, Father Mel Fox, now retired, was there, and Father Bill Zink was there, now retired. And I was fairly active in the parish, but they were having lunch in the rectory, and I stopped in. It was wintertime, and I was wearing a suit with a long coat. And they had a new cook who didn't happen to be Catholic and hadn't met very many people yet, and they decided to introduce me as the bishop. Well, she got all fluttery, you know, and they're laughing, you know, and she'd go out and get this, and they'd laugh, and so she'd come back in and so forth. Well, eventually she found out, and boy, there was hell to pay, so to speak.
Yeah, I would imagine.
No, we had a very active seniors club in St. Francis during those years. Not only that, but we also had Valentine's Day dances and Halloween dances, and both were big crowds and lots of fun. Then in 1972, the parish council was formed, and in March of 73, St. Francis Xavier initiated the Garfield Park Neighborhood Association. Mm-hmm. We invited all the other churches in the area. I think there were 12 others. I'm not sure about that number. There was more than 10. And they are still active today. The Neighborhood Association is still very active. And we're happy to say that we were an integral part of that. I go on to some of the other difficulties of the parish. Perhaps the greatest one was the financial expense of maintaining all the property. We had a lot of buildings.
Yes, you did.
And about the time we get one fixed, why, something else would go wrong. So we were always seen to be fixing roofs and that sort of thing. But it was a generous parish, and somehow we muddled through. So.
Exactly. Well, Don, you're still acting in some of the ministries there?
No, I am a member of St. Andrew's Cathedral.
Oh, at the cathedral. Yeah. Okay, okay.
But I still contribute to St. Francis.
Yes, yes. You know, I was remiss in saying I was a member there for about 8 or 10 years. I can't remember exactly how many, but I have some great memories of that parish also. I can particularly remember with Father Aniker walking through these streets in the neighborhood many times with the Eucharist, where we're doing adoration, or coming through and really witnessing to the neighborhoods. And you probably remember that, don't you?
I certainly do, and I remember all the times, on Good Friday, where we would walk the neighborhood with the doing the Stations of the Cross.
Yes.
We'd go three or four blocks, and one year one of the Lutheran Church joined us and walked with us, and that was a great privilege.
Yeah.
To have them join in with us. And we did many, many walks and processions around the neighborhood with Father Anikeyer. And, you know, I worked for Father Anikeyer, and then I worked for Father Jose. Those were my two pastors.
Right.
At the parish. The other pastors I didn't know because I wasn't there. But when I worked with Father Anikeyer, the Catholic Charismatic Renewal was on an upswing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it began to be more prevalent in people's lives and in different churches. And it became very much alive at St. Francis.
Yes, it did.
We had many years of the renewal at the parish, and it brought many, many, many parishioners to
it
the
did.
Parish, which was a wonderful thing. And what I was so privileged to be a part of at that time was there were so many Catholics in this area that were coming into the Catholic Charismatic Renewal and just getting in tune and in touch with the Holy Spirit.
Yes.
In a new way, and with reading the scriptures in a new way, and we were losing them. They were going over to 44th Street Assembly of God Church, to the Pentecostal side. And I remember we had a little meeting with Father Anikeyer, and we began to pray for these people that were doing that. And Father says, we have got to give them what they need here at St. Francis. And so as the Charismatic Renewal began to get bigger, and kind of more spread out in the metropolitan area of
right.
Grand Rapids, we became that church. And so people can say to them, oh, look, we have that in the Catholic Church too. Come on over to St. Francis. You know, you don't have to go to First Assembly of God. And I believe in a span of 8-9 years, we saved a lot of people.
Yeah.
From leaving our church. Yeah. Because of that.
You know, and I can testify to this too. There is something profound about not only when you have a charismatic a group in the church, but when the priest is charismatic. Because there's really something powerful when a priest is leading the mass in a charismatic way. And not to denigrate any of our priests, that's not what I'm suggesting.
No.
But there was a dimension to that.
There was a need at the time.
Yes.
For that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it really filled a need that was
right.
People were thirsting in the
community. And St. Francis met that need.
Yes.
And it was wonderful because so many people that came to our church said, you know, I was trying to find a charismatic church. Because I came from a charismatic church, and they would call the diocese and ask, and the diocese would tell them, call St. Francis.
Yes.
And they were so thrilled because other places that they had been to, people would say, well, I never even heard of a Catholic mm-hmm. charismatic yeah. church. So we did fill a need at that
yes.
time.
I have to tell you this. My wife was from the Detroit area, and Diane, excuse me for telling this story, but I'm going to tell it anyways. But, you know, she was a little bit disappointed in some of the parishes she'd been to in her area and some of the parishes she had been to. Just she wasn't like a typical Catholic, she said, I wasn't being fed, didn't think she really was getting what she needed. I took her to St. Francis for one of the charismatic masses, and she was just blown away. It changed her life in her outlook of the Catholic Church. And to this day, we still have that fond memory of really having that deep mystery and entering into that deep mystery with Christ at the altar. And it was a profound time in our life. And, you know, thanks be to God it happened. It was a wonderful time. So, Barbara. Let's go back again. When is the celebration going to take place for?
All right, this will be the first Saturday in June.
Okay.
At 6 p.m.
Okay.
At St. Francis Xavier and Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Okay.
It's a shrine.
And who's going to be celebrating?
It's going to be the bishop.
Praise be to God.
Oh yes, Wolkowiak.
Bishop Wolkowiak will be on the altar.
Oh yes.
And Father Jose.
Father Jose.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
I know I'll be a deacon along with my good friend, Deacon Ken Baldwin. We'll be up on the altar because both of us were sent forth. from St. Francis.
Absolutely.
Into the diaconate.
Yes, you were.
So it's a wonderful reminder of where I came from in that, too. Yeah.
Yes.
Now, after the Mass, what's going to happen?
I think there will be a reception.
Okay.
And this will be over in the, shall we say, the school auditorium. And, well, there should be some finger foods.
Okay.
Lots of opportunity to meet old friends and acquaintances.
Yes.
And
to
reminisce and also see pictures and
so important.
Wonderful timeline. Yeah.
Yeah, so important. Right. You know, one of the sorrier notes is that the school is no longer.
But yes, we do have a school in. It's renting, and the principal suggested that the school be open and that people be given tours so they can see the new schoolroom that have been added. And I thought that was very
generous. What school is that now?
It's called Hope Academy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it started out, from what I understand, for neighborhood kids or kids that were in homes that were crime-ridden.
Okay.
You know, the siblings had gotten into a lot of trouble with the law, and they wanted these children to come and have an education and not follow that cycle.
Okay.
But now it's more than that. It's even more than a neighborhood school.
Okay.
And I think there's about 250 kids in the school right now.
Now, is this Catholic-driven or is this...
No, no. It's like a charter school.
Okay, like a charter school.
But the principal's Catholic, and he works beautifully with Father Jose about anything that goes on there. It's just a wonderful, wonderful relationship. It works well.
So it really has become a respite for troubled children.
I'll have to say for myself, the saddest memory that I have at St. Francis was when they closed the school.
Yeah.
That was so hard. And I know I felt sorry for Father Jose because he had to orchestrate this.
Yes.
And people were so attached to that school and over the years. And like one lady says, you know, I cleaned toilets and I washed walls and floors. Uh-huh. And, you know, it was just like it was part of their family, part of their lives. And it was very difficult.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. At the high end, it's at the high part of the school. Do you remember what the enrollment was in school? Any idea?
Maybe 250, something
good enrollment.
Like that. Very good enrollment for that time.
Don, did your children go through that school?
Yes, they did.
They did.
At that time, there were over 800 in that school.
Really?
Yeah.
My goodness.
And the parish was very active, and I remember going to Mass in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And, of course, you didn't have Saturday Masses. And on Sunday, we had, as I recall, four. But anyway, some Masses, it was standing room only.
Yes.
And it was a joy to be participating in such a vibrant.
I'm sure. But do you ever regret any time that your children went through St. Francis?
No, indeed. It was very good training for them.
Yeah.
They have many happy, recovered thoughts about it. And four of them went on to Catholic Central. And Beth, the eldest one, went in, what was the name of Mount Mercy, it was called, on the west side. And
okay.
Good training, a lot of nuns, and of course the nuns worked for very, very little, and we were blessed.
Yes. Well, we're looking back on that now, and I'm thinking of all the time when you're talking about how many students, it takes a lot of contributions to a parish to keep a school that size going.
Yes.
So there must have been many people there who were wonderful philanthropists to the parish.
Yep.
And that's important because you can't do it alone on that respect. You know, when I think back on this too, I often wonder, because you had some great pastors. How many vocations do you think were spurned out of religious life out of that church? Any idea? I know it's a daunting task to even think about that, but there must have been, I would suggest, hundreds.
There could be. I just know of the ones that were ordained from the time period that I was there. And we had at least four in the time period that I was there. Yeah.
Into the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Wonderful. That.
And there's many more now.
Yeah, two as recent as 2013.
Yes, in June.
Right.
Yes, we just had two.
Yes.
And we have two in the seminary now, too.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Are these coming out of St. Francis? Are these primary
coming
Hispanic?
Coming out of St. Francis. Mm-hmm. No.
No?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm. No. I really believe that the vocations that I saw came from the Adoration Chapel.
Yeah.
I just believe when a church has 24/7 adoration, you're going to get vocations.
Yep, exactly.
I just believe that with my whole heart and soul. And when we instituted this chapel, I just knew it. I just knew that we were going to see vocations now, and we did.
What year was that chapel instituted?
Oh, boy.
Let me see.
It was when St. Isidore's. Uh-huh. It was the same year St. Isidore put their chapel together. We did it in the same year.
With Father Charles there then?
Yes.
So Father Charles
say 96 is what okay. I want to say. I'm not sure.
I'm sure it's Father Charles Anikar and Father Don Lomaszewski,
yes,
probably of the kindred spirit, probably came together in understanding that these were necessary.
Yes. Oh,
parishes.
Absolutely. I don't know about St. Isidore, but I remember when we went to Father and said, we want adoration 24/7.
Yeah.
And he said, in this neighborhood. And we said, yes. And we prayed, and we just knew that it could work.
Yes, it did.
Because of what it, you know, was. You know, it's been there ever since.
You know,
we've never had a problem.
And the need is so profound for adoration chapels. Mm-hmm. Barbara, that's something you never would have seen in the church you're at before.
No.
Have you been in the adoration chapel?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That must have been a strange culture to you at first.
Yes, right. Oh, so much of it.
Yes.
But, you know, I need to go back a little bit, if
okay.
I may. I think we need to give a lot of credit to the Altar Society women.
Yes, I
because,
do, too.
Because, Linda Smith, were she here, she would say, you know, it was the group of women who just went from door to door getting support for having a school for their children associated with their church. And that's a remarkable thing back in the 1940s.
Yes, of course.
Think of this.
Of course.
And they just wouldn't take no. And finally, the husbands were right along with them and said, yeah, well, we'll support you on this.
Persistence.
Yes, persistence.
You know, we just had Catholic schools about a month ago, and I continue to say that a Catholic education is the best gift you could ever give your child. It is the most profound gift you can give them because it's a gift that carries through for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. It's not like a car. It's not like clothing. It's really one that really they take within themselves and they learn to grow in the Lord. So thanks be to God for our Catholic schools.
Yes, yes.
In that respect. With the Adoration Chapel and the continuous, and I know Father Jose Quintana is doing a marvelous job there in the parish right now. You have, as I said, what is it? You have any idea with how many families are in the parish right now? Anybody have an idea on that?
I don't.
It looks to be a rather large number.
Yes. I'd say maybe 600 to 800.
Yes. Yes. Because you also, St. Joseph the Worker serves a Hispanic parish, St. Mm-hmm. Francis.
Mm-hmm.
There's another parish too, I believe.
Well, the cathedral's
Hispanic. The cathedral, yeah. They have a Spanish Mass.
Yes, they do.
And Father Jose does a Spanish Mass, correct?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yes, he is. It's wonderful. They have the Hispanic Mass at 12:30, and then they have a Hispanic Charismatic Mass at 7:30 every Sunday.
Isn't that wonderful?
It is. It's wonderful.
That is so powerful. I'm going to go back to Mrs. Cam Schulte. Mrs. Cam Schulte, thinking back on the parish, when you first came into it, yeah, what type? You must have seen a lot of growth in the numbers coming through there when you were there.
Well, it expanded so rapidly, and the church was so crowded that everybody was so anxious to get that new church built. My husband used to stop every night after work on his way home to see how much work they did that day.
Isn't that wonderful?
As if he was going to help them. But
maybe he did.
Well, it was just unbelievable how rapidly that expanded. If you weren't there at that time, at least 15 minutes before a Mass started, you sat out on a chair next to the pews.
Yes.
All the pews were packed, and they'd have these chairs right next to them.
Yes.
It was just amazing. And when they finally were finished, and the celebration was just absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. Well, let me go back a little bit. I was raised on Collins Avenue.
Oh, really?
Which is between Garfield Park and St. Francis. And as a young boy, I started kindergarten at St. Francis. And, of course, then after we'd always go to Garfield Park. Now, I don't know if Garfield Park was there at the beginning when the church was there, But it was, I remember that vividly in my childhood, being so close to the parish like that. And we started out at St. Francis. When we moved, we went over by Kalamazoo and Burton, and we became members of McLehart and Marion. And I swore my parents moved me out into the country. There was nothing there at the time. It was amazing. But I have that fond memory of St. Francis going back to that time. So, you know, I'm part of that parish too. It's a joy to have been talking about this. But, you know, in the time we have left, I want to talk a little bit about the reason we're doing the 100th anniversary, and what do you hope people get from this? I mean, there's, you know, I'm not suggesting they have to get something, but, you know, we're trying to convey a message here of the longevity of the church, of the participation of people within the church, because it really is about the people. And there's been some great, beautiful people have passed through the doors of that church there. What are some of the things you hope to convey to the people during this 100th anniversary? Who would like to start that one?
Well, I would start with the indication that God has had a plan throughout all of this. Mm-hmm. If we look at the picture of the original church, it's a mission-style church, totally different from anything around in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
There wouldn't have been the mission-style church architecture. Mm-hmm. And then when we go on further to the church as it was recently built, you still have the influence of the Spanish
yes.
in it. And people there at the time were primarily, Dorothy, were they Irish descent and Germans mm-hmm. that were, you know, no indication of Hispanic at all.
Mm-hmm.
Later, there's a picture that's in Father Wisniewski? That had some encounter with a person who was of Hispanic descent. And they had gone through a class together, and Father said to him later on, you know, I need to have a picture of Our Lady of Guadalupe for our church. No explanation in my research as to why, but he wanted that. And this archbishop said, sure, I'll send you. And so the picture came. And this was back much before we ever knew we were going to be having the current
yes.
large development of Hispanic constituency. Well, and then we'll get into the 2000s. Here comes the need for St. Joseph the Worker is just bursting at the seams.
Yes, it was.
We need a hat, and we opened our doors and said, come here. And look, now we're a shrine with Our Lady of Guadalupe, along with St. Francis Xavier.
Yeah.
God was there all the time.
He knew.
And when Father Anikeyer was there, he had a Jan Jones paint the mural
yes, absolutely.
Of Our Lady of Guadalupe on a side wall. It's huge.
It's huge.
And that was 4 years before Father Quintana even
yes.
came to
right,
our church.
Right.
And it was he just had this in his heart that he wanted Our Lady of Guadalupe there.
Tell more about the picture itself, Angie, why it's so important.
Well, it's important because Mary, of course, is important to us. And, you know, it's important now to the Hispanic people because that's their patron saint. They just love the Blessed Mother, and she's the patron saint of the Americas.
Barbara, you look like you want to say
and
something.
And the unborn.
Yeah, and you're going
and,
to. Oh, and the unborn.
Unborn,
yeah.
And remember, through that era,
yes.
there was such a drive to fight abortion. And still is.
Yeah.
We are so behind this right to life. And
yes. At the time, we were very involved with the right to life movement.
Yes.
And Jan painted this painting in her basement. And Father Anikeyer would stop in and check on her once in a while and see how the painting was coming. And at one point, he said to her, as he was looking at it, he said to her, put babies in the clouds. And she said, you know, Father, I've been thinking about that. And she said, I just thought, why would I want to put babies in the clouds? And now you're saying it. And so she painted these babies in the clouds. These little newborn babies. And it was perfect because, of course, we believe that when a baby is aborted, that Mary becomes the baby's mother.
Amen.
Because the mother, you know, forsake the baby,
yes.
And Mary, our mother, becomes their mother.
Absolutely.
And it's perfect. So if you go to St. Francis and you look at this mural, you will see these little babies in the cloud.
What a beautiful mm-hmm. thought. What a
beautiful yeah,
thought.
It is.
You know, I'd like to hear a little more, too, but wasn't there a pilgrimage for the Our Lady of Guadalupe and the statue that came in?
Oh, that was yes. the pilgrimage that came from Mexico.
Yes.
Yes, and we had people went to Mexico. They stopped in 7 cities. They made actually 9 cities. Until they got to St. Francis in Michigan, and they made like a novena throughout Mexico, which was just
as
awesome.
they carried this
15-foot statue. It was just mind-boggling the way it all happened. And we had over 3,000 people in our parking lot waiting to greet the statue
yeah.
as it was brought in on a truck.
You know, it's hard for most Catholics in the United States, just the normal Catholic sitting in the pew, to understand this beautiful pilgrimage that this statue went on, to mm-hmm. think of the work involved with the statue mm-hmm. and then the consecration they really gave to the statue and this novena they were praying really brought dignity to this whole process of bringing it into the parish.
It is. It's
and I
incredible.
Think what a powerful testimony to the people, not only St. Francis, mm-hmm. but the love of the Blessed Mother by the Mexican people. They just, mm-hmm. this is a powerful testimony. Thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at this too, and we're talking about it now. Andrew, what would you like people to get out of this understanding of the 100th year?
Well, I just would hope that the people that have been past parishioners of St. Francis will come and see what we have become.
Yeah.
And look at their past, too. And, you know, tour the school if they were students, and come to the Mass and celebrate with us in thanksgiving to our Lord for what he has done for the people of St. Francis Xavier.
Yeah.
Because the Lord has done a lot. And I agree with, you know, our friend over here that, Barb, that it was all in God's plan for this parish.
Mm-hmm.
It evolved. Over the years, the way God wanted it to evolve, and I'm excited to see where He's going to take it from here.
Absolutely.
You know, we in the year 2000, we put together a millennial trunk.
Oh, I remember that.
And we put all kinds of mementos in this trunk of the people that were parishioners at the time of St. Francis. We put bulletins and music and pictures and letters and all kinds of things. And this trunk is to be open 100 years, you know, in the next millennium.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, wouldn't it be nice to be around to see the people open this trunk and see my picture in the trunk, you know, and my letter that I wrote and everything. But, of course, I'll be watching from heaven to see this. But it was so exciting to me to think about that because now we're celebrating 100 years. And you can imagine what the people thought 100 years past.
That's right.
About what was going to be going on 100 years from now. What was the parish going to look like
exactly.
100 years from now?
Exactly.
And so that's what I hope that they come with in their heart and want to come and visit.
Yeah, exactly.
And experience this celebration.
You know, and thanks be to God, there were so many parishioners that had visions for the church as it continued on. And, you know, and we think about all the people that have passed away in that the church and those that we will be reunited with in heaven that will have been members of St. Francis and all the beautiful catechesis and evangelization that went on in that church. Don, you must want to have some expectations for what it means.
Well, I put it this way. If you were a member of St. Francis Parish for 5 years or more, St. Francis Xavier to be exact, you're a member for life, so to speak.
That's right.
And coming back, you're going to see some of those friends that you held so dearly. Unfortunately, we went this way, we went that way. But if you get back together, that'll be a very joyous time.
Yeah,
it will.
It will, to see them all coming back together. What a wonderful thing. Mrs. Cam Schulte, what are you hoping that people will remember about this 100th anniversary? Is there anything in particular?
Well, I guess all the extra things we had and novenas and plays and the social life have mingled with the sacred life.
Yes.
And I think that over the years there's been so much.
Yeah, I know.
So much.
Just drawing back a little bit on your history, were you involved in some of the ministries at the parish?
Oh. I thought for a while it was my second home, and so did my family.
What are a couple of them?
I just belonged to everything. I was so interested in everything.
Yes.
And then one time one of the sisters, she knew I was very interested in the church, and I was in the choir and everything, even as a young girl, junior choir. And she said, would you like to stay after school every night for about 10 minutes and just help me get ready for the priest's mass in the morning? And I said, oh, I was just delighted. That's right up my alley.
Of course.
And so I learned how to lay vestments, and I got so interested in that sanctuary that it really was like a second home. Learned just everything about it. And and then later on, when the nuns would go to Mount Mercy in the summertime, we would take over.
Well, did you become like a sacristan back there?
I took care of the sanctuary during the summertime.
Oh, yes.
And it was really interesting. We learned so many things that you don't think about now.
Exactly.
Like scraping the votive candles and getting those all ready. And
that's
cleaning.
Right.
You had to clean.
The everyday work.
And we didn't have a vacuum.
No, goodness.
We had a push one.
Yes.
And, but I did, I enjoyed it so much. And I was trying to think something else that we learned. The votive candles and the vestments. We always had to take care of the vestments.
Of course.
Oh, and the flowers. There was no such thing as ordering flowers from a florist in those days.
Yes.
The good people of the parish would bring their garden flowers and leave them at the side door. And we would get them all together and try to make bouquets for Sunday and everything. It was,
it was
a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for your service there. Barbara, just about a minute. What would you hope that the people glean out of this 100th anniversary?
Well, as I said in the beginning, that God is there throughout the entire plan.
Yeah.
And I would hope, too, that they would see there's been a healing in more ways than one. You know, our Monday night masses for healing, the first Monday, is truly miraculous.
Yes.
If you just come
to the healing mass.
To the healing mass. And if you can't come to the healing mass, well, just come to church, because you'll be healed just by the presence.
Yes.
Of our Lord.
Yes. Amen. Amen.
I think we can sum St. Francis, or the shrine of St. Francis Xavier and Our Lady of Guadalupe, up with this. Somewhere, and I don't know when it happened, you ladies would probably know, the parish decided to give the church a title. And they entitled it St. Francis Xavier, the parish with a soul.
Yes.
And that always touched me when I would see that on the old bulletins.
Yes.
St. Francis Xavier, the parish with a soul. And I really believe it is the parish with a soul.
I need to have that date again that the Mass is going to be on.
It's the first Saturday of June.
All right.
And it's going to be at 6 p.m. with Bishop Wolkowiak.
Wonderful.
Yes,
wonderful.
Right.
I want to thank all of you for being here. I want to thank Don Jandernoa and Mrs. Kamschulte, Barbara Hansen, and Angie Zaccone. It's been a privilege to have this conversation with you about this beautiful parish, St. Francis Xavier. It really has been home for all of us. It really has been a place where we really found the Lord in a deep and mysterious way, and I know that I grew in my faith through them, and I can see in all your faces that the Lord is really important in your lives, too, because He is who we are, and we are who He is. We are Christ to others. And really, that was the emphasis. That parish for the soul really brought that to a forefront, right, that we became Christ to others in the world. And again, I want to thank all of you for being here so much, and it's been my privilege to have you here.
Thank you for having
us.
I want to thank all our listeners. This is Deacon Jim Thorndal, Holy Family Radio. I'm wishing you a beautiful day in God, and bless, and may He bless you abundantly. Thank you.
Amen. Thank you. You've been listening to Living the Catholic Life with your host, Deacon Jim Thorndale, on Holy Family Radio. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with a friend, audio copies are available online at holyfamilyradio.net. Thank you for listening.